Welcome to the Canadian Real Estate Investor, where hosts Daniel Foch and Nick Hill navigate the market and provide the tools and insights to build your real estate portfolio.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Canadian Real Estate Investor Podcast.
What's your name?
Daniel Foch.
There you go. My name is Nick Hill, and we are back with another episode. And today is special. We're going to do something that we haven't really ever done before here on the show. Felt it was time. We are going to share with you more about who we are and how we got here. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, welcome. These episodes usually aren't about us. They usually focus on things like the latest and greatest news in the real estate and mortgage markets, or reports that we distill down and discuss money making and investing strategies in real estate and more.
So we also look at investing fundamentals and principles, and we chat on macro. We do cover a lot of macro and policy and things that have effects on the Canadian housing market. And we even look at subjects like true crime in real estate. Yeah. I guess we haven't done one of those yet, but we're working
kinda.
On
we've, it. We've touched on it, but yeah, we haven't done a deep dive into true crime yet.
Yeah, and we also cover a lot of lessons learned by industry thought leaders and great investors. And so we felt it was time to do an episode like this because we just hit a special landmark for us here at the Canadian Real Estate Investor Podcast, which was 1 million downloads.
1 million downloads. That is 1 million audio downloads, which is apparently quite the accomplishment in the podcast space. And actually, we hit it a few months ago, but there was just so many other things that we had to cover on the podcast, some episodes we had ready to go, but definitely a big milestone. And Dan, if you had told me or us a few years ago that we'd have the biggest podcast in real estate in Canada, I don't know if I would have believed you. But then again, it was a mutual goal of ours years ago to start creating content and to build a community for the next generation of real estate investors here in Canada. So if you had told me a few years ago, I might have believed you. I would have been very excited about the thought of where we are now.
Yeah. And you mentioned the community piece. To me, that's probably like really the whole guiding principle behind this whole thing, where we want to connect people who are interested in real estate investing with one another. Like, this isn't just about us. It actually goes far beyond us. And so if you listen to this show and you want to meet other investors, you can go to a meetup and you can meet them. You can connect with them through our online community, the realist.ca course, or probably the easiest way to do it is actually take a screenshot of you listening to this episode or any episode and post it to your Instagram story and tag Nick and I, and we'll share it. And then somebody else who listens to the podcast, who follows us on Instagram, will see that and they'll tap on your share, the shared story that we shared, and they'll follow you on Instagram. And now all of a sudden you can get to know each other. It's probably the easiest way. It also does us a huge favor by helping to promote the podcast, but go and do that. So anyway, we are just getting started, and we're happy that we're kind of building something pretty special, I think, for the Canadian real estate space. A lot of people, you know, come up to us and say that they're fired up because these events that we're creating are so approachable, or the content that we're sharing on the podcast is different. And that's what like our goal is, really, to stand out and to make it something that, like, the real estate space is incredibly well built up, right? There's a lot of formal events. There's a lot of podcasts that discuss things different than ours, a lot of interview style. It was hard for us to find a niche in the space where we weren't competing with people who are already doing that. And in some cases, like, I'm not going to lie, there's a lot of those are saturated, but a lot of them are also already being done well. Like, you and I go on a lot of interview podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
We couldn't compete with a lot of those people. And so we chose not to. What we do is we're doing something very different, where it's just Nick and I sitting in a studio talking about real estate.
Sitting in a dark room talking about real estate twice a week.
Yeah. Actually, like, literally just in a dark room at the back of my garage talking about real estate.
Very glamorous, as all real estate is.
And so, yeah, I mean, we're really happy, and we feel that this is something special. And we say that because of the amazing people that we've met along the way and that have been attracted to what we're doing here from every corner of our amazing country. The people we do deals with, the people in our realist course, the community, and those are things that we feel are changing the game. We are trying to disrupt the real estate space and what we're doing here.
Yeah, exactly, Dan. And I mean, we're lucky because not only have we been approached with and are now part of a lot of amazing prop tech companies, property technology, and that space is really exciting and changing because they're revolutionizing the way that we engage with real estate through technology and AI. And then again, of course, the badass people that come out and attend our events and the amazing hosts that have now signed on across the country. So much to be thankful for. Could not have gotten here without a lot of those people mentioned.
For sure. And so today's podcast is a little different than the others. And that's because we aren't really covering a report or breaking news or looking at investing fundamentals or strategies or how to hunt deals. What's it about today?
Yeah, it's about us. Who we were before the podcast and our journey on how to get here, the successes and the failures and the lessons that we have learned along the way, and how we built this podcast and the community around it, and how we have built our other businesses and our real estate portfolio.
So I guess it is kind of about real estate after all.
Well, let's just say real estate is a major theme, right? Hard for us not to talk about it. So Dan, this is how we're going to start things off. Why don't we get a bit of a background on you? So tell me a bit about yourself, your background in business and entrepreneurship. Go as far back as you want, but don't go anywhere past after we met. And then I'll do the same, okay?
Sure, sounds good. So my name is Daniel Foch. I guess we got to go way back, eh?
We don't need toddler type stuff, but no, maybe, you know, universities, maybe even high school would be good. When did you start your first business?
I discovered my passion for real estate while I was in the womb. No. In high school, I was part of something called Summer Company, Ontario Summer Company. Weren't you in that too?
No.
No? So Ontario had this like grant program for people who were starting businesses. So at the end of high school, I got this. It was for like students to start summer companies. Then they give you like $3,000 startup money. I bought like an iMac. I think I bought an iMac, which was because I was running a social media business for realtors. This is a true story. So this is why I'm good at social media, by the way. And I waited a long time before I did anything in social media when I first got my real estate license. But I did that business for a long time out of high school. Let's just assume your life kind of begins at high school. But I also worked on a farm and I lived there. When I tell this story, people actually don't believe me. I was at the farm over the weekend too, because they were doing like an Easter egg hunt there, and I brought the kids to do the Easter egg hunt. But I moved out of my parents' place right after high school to live on this farm. And I worked there just shoveling horse poop and turning out horses and doing like not
classic,
cow, not
classic Yellowstone. Type
yeah,
of
no,
behavior.
I wasn't like that. Like it's more. I mean, horseback riding is very different from Yellowstone. But I guess for people like you who don't know,
ouch.
Yeah, then
just a TV cowboy over here.
Yeah, that it was. You know, it. But it, I love that world. Like it was. I was obsessed with. I could have stayed doing that forever, honestly. No word of a lie. I could have shoveled horse poop forever. But miraculously, the farm that I was at was hit by a tornado. No joke. Actually, tornadoes seem to be a common thread here. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Nick and I'm not allowed to talk about that because it's after we met, but Nick and I were working on this deal and the deal got hit by a tornado. Not the whole deal, but just
really,
the property.
Really annoying thing to happen.
But you guys lost some trees in your yard and that whole area in Uxbridge was just like leveled. That was 2 years ago now?
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah. Crazy.
So anyway, similar thing, not too far from there as well. So I guess tornado is pretty common over there. But so I lived at this farm. It was my job. And I had a car too, which this is important to the story because the tornado killed all of those things. My car, my house, and my job, which sounds like a country song, right? Lost them all in one shot. So anyway, after that, I started traveling a little bit. I was living in a station wagon with all of my clothes up top of my station wagon. Not that I was like, I could have gone back to my parents' house or something. Like I wasn't hard done by any means, but I was just a little bit of a vagabond. And I was traveling around to different horse shows and just working in the horse industry as long as I could. And then I got a letter in the mail from Switzerland. Yeah. Like literally Switzerland sent me a letter saying, hey, you know, because you're a citizen, a Swiss citizen, you have to come and do military conscription. And
enough horsing around.
Get back to Switzerland. Get up in the, so, and I never lived there or whatever, but I guess in like the 90s, they had this citizenship repatriation kind of thing going on where, because my dad was Swiss, they gave me a citizenship, or my mom became Swiss and then they gave me a citizenship. And so I was like, you know what? I got nothing else. It was either that. It was like literally either that, or I was going to basically fully commit to going in the like lifetime lifer in the horse industry. And I met a couple of lifers in the horse industry during that period of time from before I got hit in the tornado to when I was like working the horse shows. And I was like, I don't know if I want to be one of those guys. No offense to them, but like a couple of those guys just wasn't really the vision that I had for myself. And so I got this letter and I was like, you know what? This sounds like a just whatever, you know, screw it. Just send it. And I did. I was like, yeah, okay, cool. Let's go. And I went to Switzerland, did a couple of like in onboardings and stuff like that. And I don't know how they let me in, cause I couldn't speak the languages. Like I remember doing these like courses on their computers there. They're asking me a bunch of questions. I had no clue what it was going on. And, anyway, I made it into the Swiss Army without speaking any of their official languages. Went there briefly. I didn't finish my conscription because of I was honorably discharged. I have sleep apnea, which I didn't know wasn't allowed in the Army. I was the only person in the whole Army that wanted to be there, by the way. Like everybody else is, you know, honestly.
And of course, the one guy that gets kicked out.
Yeah. So then there was like a outbreak of like norovirus. And am I going too granular here? Like,
No, not at all. Hey.
This is a funny story. So there was an outbreak of norovirus in the barracks. And then when I was getting checked for that, the doctor like pulled my file and he was like, you have sleep apnea? And I was like, yeah. He's like, you can't be in the Army. And I was like, okay. So this was a couple months in. So anyway, I got honorably discharged, was no longer in the Army. And then I was chatting with my parents while I was away and whatever. And they were kind of like, well, you probably should go to university or something like that. And I was like, that sounds like something I'm going to fail at. Right. And, my mom found this program that was a co-op program. Guelph has a BCom with a co-op. And, that's what I was like, okay, like if I'm going to get through university, it's going to have to be a co-op. I got to work, you know, like I got to make some money. I got to be able to be out in the field. Cause otherwise I couldn't get through school. This probably surprises some people cause I sound like I am into like school and like the, like academics and stuff like that. But I'm like, not, I suck at it. I'm like, actually I'm not bad at it, but I just like didn't thrive in that environment. Anyway, went to Guelph, did a BCom, majored in real estate and housing. Worked at a bunch of different shops during my co-op and like really got a grasp for like what I wanted to do in the industry. I got to touch and feel a bunch of different roles, a bunch of different asset classes. I learned a ton about real estate, and because I'm not very good at school, I learned it in such a way that it was like, what's the bare minimum to get by here? And now me starting this podcast with you is me reiterating all of that bare minimum information back to people. Yeah. Honestly, it's mostly just stuff I learned in a BCom real estate and housing. And a lot of guys we brush shoulders with in the industry took the same degree as me, but you know, they know it way better than I do. And so they actually have real jobs. Whereas mine's just like this, right? Talking.
So when did the first real estate investment happen?
Oh yeah. This is another funny story. So first year of university, me and my buddy, Tim, decided to scale South Residence at Guelph, and they weren't very fond of that. And so we were no longer allowed in South Residence at Guelph, which is where we
lived.
Sounds
about right. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I should be telling that story in case I want to get into politics or something one day, but I guess it makes me more relatable
for all the rock climbers out there.
Yeah. And I don't like lying anyway. So yeah, it was, they kicked us out of res. So, which was interesting because res is very expensive. And so and we hadn't paid our deposit for second semester yet. So they let us finish because it took them so long, like the bureaucracy so long to get it processed. And we took the deposit and we got a really sweet place, just me and him. And on like the far end of town, all of our friends are like came and would, you know, our house was like the place to party at and whatever, because it was off campus. And anyway, you know, through that process, I was chatting with my parents and they were like, these student rentals is like a racket, right? Like, holy crap, it's expensive. And so my dad came up with a deal with me where it was like, let's do a student rental together. And so we did. And that was my first deal, came because I got kicked out of res.
There you go. Lesson, kids. Get kicked out of res. Don't convince your parents to go on a deal with you. That's awesome. So do you still have that one?
No. But that funded my first owner occupied. So I took, back when I was buying, it was like, I think I got 50K equity out of that. Yeah, I want to say 50K equity out of that. And I rolled it into my first owner occupied that I bought right after that. And then put two units into that. So I bought that with like the next one. It was in the new market, 90% loan to value, CMHC insured, 10% down. I think I paid like 480 for it. But that one in Guelph, yeah, I had it for like 4 years, and it was kind of like, it was before things went crazy, because I bought my second property in 2016, but it was a while. And then I got some capital appreciation plus some principal pay down from it. And yeah, it really helped me to buy my next place, right?
So what other businesses, because I know you've started several businesses and you've got your hands in a lot of things. Talk to me about some of the entrepreneurial things within or outside of directly investing in real estate that you've been a part of over the last decade, let's say.
Yeah. So I would say, I think that social media business was like, I always sleep on that one, but whenever I mention it to people, they're like, oh, like that makes a lot of sense now, you know? So I didn't even really consider it a business. Like, I remember somebody bought like my clients off of me, and somebody was like, you sold the business. But it wasn't like, it wasn't a corp or anything. So yeah. I didn't, you know,
you just sold the list and you're like, okay, whatever.
Well, I sold like all the contracts that I had with those clients. So I had a bunch of realtors who like this. So I basically, this is how old the business was. Like, it was when social media was literally like YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Yeah. And I would,
the good old,
yeah. And so I would charge agents like a $500 setup fee to like create all of those accounts for them and like build SOPs on like how to use them and like create a nice like little, I think Facebook pages didn't even have like the banner at that point. Yeah. So it was like, just, you know what I mean?
Like, but social Facebook media pages, starter kits basically.
Yeah. And then I would charge them a monthly management fee, and I would populate them with content. And so then I would
MRR
charge
them, way back then, off social media.
Yeah. That's awesome. Plus a per listing. And then, yeah, I had these guys, actually one of the guys that I met from that incubator program, the summer company incubator program, was running like a more established, or got, I don't know, ended up partnering in a more established marketing agency, and they purchased the all the clients off of me because they wanted to get more into the real estate space. So that really gave me, I didn't even really acknowledge it. And then somebody asked me about it because it was on my LinkedIn, and I was like, yeah, I guess that really is where all of my ability to do social media came from. Other stuff, like, I don't know if I would really give much to my other, like any other business things. Most things that I did, it was like, just cause I have ADHD and I was like bored with what I was doing. So I was like, here's my side thing. I guess I'm reasonably successful as a real estate professional.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't sleep on that.
Yeah.
Done a ton of transactions, both a lot of residential, a lot of small cap investment stuff, but some crazy. Do you feel comfortable sharing any of the more crazy stories, or really unique deals that you've done?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some wild deals that I've worked on with, like with Johnny or with some other folks in the space. I mean, probably the most notable one, I remember I had two clients who were, this is during like the Bitcoin craze, the first one, not the most recent one, like 2016, 2017, which is fortunate because I started getting introduced to Bitcoin during that period of time, and getting exposure at that point was good, obviously. But we were looking for like Bitcoin mining facilities, and so myself and Sina, yeah, and some other folks were flying around the country, like looking for, going to cold climate areas where you could run these Bitcoin miners for a long period of time. Like, I remember I was going to like rural parts of like Labrador.
Wow.
Northern Manitoba. Yeah. Sina was flying all over the place too, because Johnny and I both had kids. So he was kind of the, yeah. And so, yeah. So he was out there just like Newfoundland, Labrador, a lot of Manitoba stuff. Some crazy, crazy deals that were going on during that period of time. I've done quite a few like other like development stuff, development advisory and financing, but probably better to keep those ones in my pocket, I would say. Not for any other reason, just that they're pretty private deals. So
yeah. And then I guess jumping forward, we'll keep a lot of that stuff. But now you and we've got our hands in several different things. So I think, you know, early days, real estate family, got involved in real estate investing almost a decade ago, and have just been building unique businesses or providing unique services around real estate related products.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I suppose I didn't mention that both my parents are in real estate. And so like I grew up surrounded by this stuff. And I think that gave me like probably a pretty big competitive advantage in just like learning things very quickly. Both my parents are very successful in the real estate space in their own right. So, you know, some might say that I would be a rider of the coattails, and I have no, like, I'm not like one of these people who like is super proud of being self-made, you know, like it doesn't really matter to me. You know, I would say, yeah, absolutely. Like, what would you have done in my scenario? You know, like,
yeah, 100%. Yeah, so. And I can tell you that that's not the case. I think you are very self-made, specifically speaking, because I'm self-made stuff with you that
right.
Certain other people have had no influence on whatsoever. So, you know, again, being very humble.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. Like, I mean, there was obviously like some advantage and privilege. Yeah, some people might call it to like, you know, growing up the way that I did. Like, that is what, you know, it would have been silly to not capitalize on that and compound all of that, you know, growth and knowledge and exposure that I had. So that's what I did. It is funny though, because when you're a teenager, like you're like, oh, I hate whatever my parents do. You know, like I remember in high school being like, oh, I'm never going to be in real estate because it's like, I saw, you know, how much it like how much my parents worked and how hard it was, you know, how stressful it was. But then I'm glad that I decided that was the wrong mentality to have, because I obviously am really like really, really passionate about this industry. So yeah, I don't know. I couldn't imagine anything else like that I would be this passionate about, really, honestly.
Yeah. Nature conservatories or big trucks maybe.
Yeah, I'm big into like heavy equipment for sure. Yeah, but like, you know, you kind of always make an assumption. Like you say, you think you're going to be into something. And this happens to me a lot in like these spinoff businesses that I'll like play around with for like a week and then, or you know, like not a week, but like, it's like, oh yeah, like just, you know, mess around with like a friend and think about like doing a business. And then you actually play the tape to the end and you're like, oh, actually, you know, this wasn't it. And then it kind of just falls off the side of your desk, right? I'm sure you've had a ton of examples like that too.
Couple.
So now do I get the same privilege of you telling me your story? Was I exhaustive enough?
Like, I would be on. Yeah. I mean, if that,
I don't think I left anything out. Yeah. I mean, it probably did, but probably for the better. Maybe it'll come up.
Maybe we'll do another one of these episodes at 2 million.
Yeah, sure.
Finish the story then. Yeah. I mean, I'll take mine back to a pivotal year in my life, which was, so I was born and raised in Vancouver. My parents moved us over to Ontario when I was in grade 7. I come from a middle class family. My dad's a teacher. My mom's a social worker. Really amazing people. Grew up in a very loving household, but not much business acumen between the two of them. And mom and dad, I know you're listening, so I'm sorry. I love you. But I moved out to Vancouver. I moved back out to Vancouver in my early 20s, actually, when I was attending University of Guelph. I'm a year or two older than Dan, so we were never in the same classes, but I moved out there and worked underneath my uncle, who's a very successful businessman. And that's when I realized, I was like, okay, I was going to school to be a lawyer at that point, and just totally switched everything and was like, I need to be an entrepreneur. I had this like the strongest force in me to become an entrepreneur. First business I started wasn't even really a business. It was called Disposable Camera Project. We would buy disposable cameras, put them in a package, go and hang them in cool spots. Started in Toronto and Vancouver. We'd go hang them in cool spots with a sign that said, take the camera, take a picture, put the camera back, find your photos here. After a few months of working on that, it had kind of changed my life a little bit. We had volunteers working for us across the globe. We were in like 14 cities and like 8 countries. It was super cool. I was having meetings with like Vancouver Tourism. I was on TV. I was in like the newspapers, but I was actually extraordinarily broke. Okay. I would, at this point, I had finished working for my uncle. I was working at an architecture and engineering firm as like a junior associate. I would work there all day, change out of my suit attire, and then go and work all night on this stuff, spend all my money on building this business up. And I remember at one point I was eating like one meal a day. It was like a big bowl of pho that was like $14, then it filled me up all day. Anyways, that business unfortunately kind of died out because it was me and 3 other young broke guys. We couldn't really figure out a direct path to monetization. But after that, I was like, you know what? I just love being an entrepreneur. I love creating businesses and starting. So a couple more things like that. Then I bounced around back and forth. I was in construction for a little while, working on like capital projects at a large like medical facility that created its own drugs and whatnot. So I was on the capital projects team there. And then I decided to leave that very well-paying job to become a broker in commercial real estate. So I was still living at home at the time, or I just moved back home because I had just moved back from British Columbia. So I was living at home with my parents, started this job in construction, then left for commercial real estate as a junior associate there, started hitting the phones, making cold calls every day. And on top of that, I decided to start another side business called Goodwood, which was live edge charcuterie boards, live edge tables, and that kind of stuff. So at one point, that business was doing really well. I had an amazing partner who's now private chef in Turks and Caicos, but we ran a pretty good business there, and we were kind of ahead of the curve on that live edge charcuterie board that you see everywhere now, right? You know, you see them at like
you invented those.
Yeah, we kind of invented them, right? Another Nickel original. Yeah.
That was the original Nickel
original. Original, yeah. But it was awesome, man. I mean, we did stuff for like Gord Downie. We did a bunch of stuff for like hockey players. We actually, one of our biggest sellers was home builders who were using them for home like gifts, right? Like you get your home, you get here's an engraved, you know, cutting board, whatever. So that went really well. We had a storefront, a bunch of equipment and everything. And then as my commercial real estate responsibilities started to increase, I kind of started to, we sold some shares to another partner. Anyways, I kind of worked my way out of that business. And then before I got into real estate, the last business I had that really gave me a decent amount of cash to kind of keep on investing in my own personal portfolio of rentals was a company called Mist, which I started with another guy that I met when I was doing business development for tenant fit out projects. So a big bank or eBay in this instance wanted new office space. My job was to go and be friends with just about everybody involved, from designers to architects, engineers, brokers, put the project together. I met a great guy there. We started right when COVID started. We kind of, both of our corporate jobs got really messed up. I decided that was the last time I was ever going to rely on someone else for a paycheck. When we started importing from China, these things called Mist, we came up with the name and everything was great. Essentially, remember the days when everyone was touching the hand sanitizer bottles and it was all kind of disgusting? We literally started bringing these things over that you poured liquid, nice smelling hand sanitizer with like lotion in it, and you'd put your hand over and it misted upwards onto your hand. So we did quite well with that. And that is basically up until I met Dan, which is, I guess, chapter two of this story that we're telling here.
Yeah. So I guess in movies, mostly rom-coms, when people meet, it's known as a meet cute. I guess that's a scene where two people meet for the first time, usually under these unusual, humorous or cute circumstances, and go on to form a future romantic couple. Now, obviously this didn't work out for us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the romance part, it didn't, but.
Well, it is the way that most modern romances start, which is from a DM slide, right?
Exactly. So again, you know, kind of unusual, funny way in which we met and became business partners, but not the romantic part, unfortunately, didn't work out between Dan and I like that. Now, Dan, before we go on with the story, we need to come up with like a meet cute version, but for like business partnerships. So like meet corp or meet biz or meet bro. I don't know. You got any ideas?
No, I don't, honestly.
Okay, good, because even when I was writing those down, it was hard for me to come up with a good
I did want to. I was trying to think of this good pun when you were talking about Mist, about how it wasn't a missed opportunity. Yeah.
Damn, there
we go. But it was a missed opportunity, that's the thing.
Well, yeah. Asked
me it. Yeah. So my pun thing is not on today.
That's okay. We have other things to discuss today. So why don't I tell everyone how we met, and then you tell everyone kind of how we initially started working together.
Yeah, sounds good.
So I was, at this point, I decided I'd always been in real estate. I had spent time on construction sites in architecture and engineering. I had been hitting the phones and doing cold calls for commercial real estate brokers and closed a couple of deals. It was great. But at this point, I was like, hey, I'm all in on real estate investing. That's going to be what I do with my life. Enters Dan into my life. Now, I had had mutual friends go and actually share one of his stories to me on Instagram.
Thank you, mutual friends.
And they had been like, hey, you should connect with this guy. He's trying to put together this deal, whatever, whatever. And he's doing some cool stuff. So I was like, okay, interesting. Add Dan on
That's
Instagram.
That's a tornado deal, by the way.
Add Dan on Instagram, and we've got a bunch of mutuals, and he's got some interesting content. This is years ago, so nothing like the content that you're all used to seeing. Years ago, he's got some interesting stuff. He's got, you know.
Yeah, I used to do, like, what is it, IGTVs? I would just, like, put my phone on the table and just, like,
IGTV stuff. Like, yeah, it was, like, 45 minutes of him rambling. I'm like, who watches this shit? Yeah.
And then, three people.
Yeah, and then it was also, yeah, me was one of them. Yeah, one of the three views. And then the other stuff, it was, like, you know, you were taking photos of beautiful homes and whatnot. It was a lot, very different world back then, but I
went through like an edgy photographer phase.
Yeah,
like,
a lot of black and whites and reds and
I was obsessed with like red brick houses.
Yeah, but it was cool and it spoke to me and I, like, you know, I loved architecture, right? I'd spent time in architecture and engineering and that's like what I wanted to initially be, one of the things I wanted to be.
It's such a big component, eh? Sorry, I keep interrupting you, but like the design element is like one 100%. Of the things I think that it's like why people get obsessed with real estate so much, because there's such a creative aspect that like really can give you that like creative fulfillment.
And you can realize that fulfillment in so many different ways, right? Whether it's interior, exterior, hardscaping, landscaping, any type of the add value stuff. Anyway, so I reached out to Dan by doing what everyone does, so every great couple meets, so every great person meets another one, by sliding into his DMs on Instagram.
That's the second Nick Hill original, by the way.
And at that
DM
point,
sliding people.
At that point, Dan, it was COVID had just started, like literally. Maybe we were like a couple months into COVID and Dan was doing these things called co-video chats.
Yeah. So it's funny because I actually started, I started podcasting before the co-video chats. And I got to sneeze here. Give me a second. Oh, maybe not.
3, 2. Okay. There we go.
You're supposed to look at the light. No.
I thought you were supposed to say elephant under your breath.
Oh, really?
Yeah, works for me sometimes.
If you see me going to sneeze, just, take over for me. So I started doing a podcast. It was called Brick and Mortar, which is like, you know, trying to be creative. I always thought all podcasts needed to have these catchy creative names, which it seems like most people are still doing it that way. I have been converted to the very literal SEO friendly crowd now by Braden and Simo, who created Canada's number one investing podcast, The Canadian Investor, which naturally became the Canadian Real Estate Investor, but I won't jump ahead of us. So yeah, I had this thing called Brick and Mortar. I want to say the first guest I had was Joey.
It was Joey, and then there was like Skrinko was on there, nice and early.
Skrinko was like, that was post COVID. Like,
oh really?
Yeah, he was not. Yeah. So I originally was going to try and start a podcast with Joey. That was our first episode was me and Joey, I think.
Yeah,
and
I remember. I watched it.
Yeah, we're talking about.
And I was like, wow, this is pretty brutal.
It was bad. It was really bad. And then, I had my buddy Mike, he's like killing it now. He's going to get a PhD. He's like an actuarial scientist, and he's one of the smartest people I know in finance. But him and I were doing some crazy stuff with like hedge funds and. Well, not me. I'm not smart enough by any means. But anyway, so I had a bunch of people on, and then COVID happened, and then I was like, okay, well, this kind of changes the. And I was like literally following Gary V's like thing to a T, where he was like, yeah, just put a phone on the table, and you know, and so my audio was like horrible. Like the whole thing was just horrible, and that's very on brand for me. Like even now, I have the podcast, which is produced well, but like my other content is just horrible, right? Like bad audio, bad, like I'm just like, you know, whipping it together in the middle of between appointments or whatever. Anyway, so COVID started, I started this thing where I was just like, oh, everybody knows how to use Zoom now, so just gonna hop on Zoom and just start recording these conversations that I'm having with everybody. And so I started doing that, and I was just the same set of questions over and over. I was literally doing one of them a day during COVID at the beginning, like for the first little bit during COVID. Yeah. Cause I was just like, whatever, like it's so easy. I just go on Zoom, hit record, have a chat, put it on YouTube, get like a couple hundred views. Eventually, like I think I was peaking at like, I was getting like 1200, 1500 views per conversation. There's still a huge like Rolodex of all those. If anybody is curious as to how COVID impacted 10 different industries, like in real estate, I was doing that. And then I kind of like stopped doing that and started going back into more of like and I was uploading those to audio as well. And then I guess you reached out, and I was personally like running out of steam with the content. Like I was like, I don't know how much longer I could do this. And so I was like, Nick, if you want, like, it would really help me. It would really resurrect, like, you know, if you can help me take this over. And I kind of showed you all the systems and whatever. And then I think you and I ran this Brick and Mortar podcast for a while.
Yeah.
Right.
That'd be like at least 8 months or
doing the interview style stuff. And and which didn't really work all that well with multiple people, like two interviewers. And anyway, I think we were both running out of steam too. Like we were literally thinking about like,
we had a conversation at one point. We're like, man, it might be time now.
We got a couple more interviews.
And let's put the attention somewhere else. And we were both getting pretty busy as a mortgage broker and as a real estate investor and as a real estate broker at that point, right? We had small portfolios of our own stuff to look after. I was doing a bunch of renovations on my own properties at that point, like sleeping on the floor in Cornwall and doing mortgage deals, like, you know, hotspotting off my phone. And it just got to the point where
I remember I came out and did a video with you. Yeah. We've seen him. Remember?
Yeah. That was one of the first pieces of content we ever made together. And that was years ago. So what was the pivotal moment between brick and mortar and the Canadian real estate investor, Dan?
So the pivotal moment was Braden from the Canadian Investor Podcast reached out to me and he was like, hey, you know, we're interviewing agents for, I just found out like that he actually had contacted a bunch of people.
Bastard.
Because he's very methodical, right? Like he is really like a systems based business
great
person.
Businessman,
great businessman. And so he obviously wanted to make sure he was making the right decision. And I guess because I was doing a bunch of stuff on Twitter and they were pretty active on Twitter. Twitter's pretty popular for like inbounding for podcasts. And I showed up on their radar and he asked me and I just didn't let him like even think about anyone else. Like I was like, yeah, let's start. Like we can go right. And I think everyone else was like, yeah, like I'll think about it. Like let's discuss the opportunity more or whatever. And I was like, no, for sure. Done. Like I'm in, let's go. I'm your guy. Like, and, I didn't really let him take no for an answer. And so, his big condition was like, the style, which is their style. And I listened to, like when he first reached out, I must've listened to like 80% of their podcast. Like I just had it on constantly at all times. Whatever I was doing, I was just listening to their podcast because I wanted to know what I was talking about. And I think I had heard a couple of their episodes before, but not many. Anyway, so he was like, you need a co-host. Like this is the thing. And I was like, okay, well, fortunately, like that's exactly what I have. You know, he's not great, but no, I'm just kidding. No, he was like, and they need to be really good and it's a lot of work and whatever. And he explained the relationship that him and Simone have and whatever. And I was like, okay, like this is the guy. Like this was like, and I remember sending you a screenshot and I was like, it was like,
I don't know what
like,
we're getting ourselves into.
No, it was
here,
like,
but
it was like, how about timing, right? Because it was, we were in the middle of like figuring out what our succession
what was next
from, And then I got that message and I was like, would you be in? And then Nick and I got on a call with them the next day, I think. And then it was literally like, there was a contract 2 days later and
it
then
moved fast. And we didn't know what we were getting into at that point.
No,
we didn't know how much work it would be or how much it would change lives. I mean, so basically, you know, this helped because we worked on it for, I think, 3 or 4 months before we even launched. Like we had several episodes ready to go.
Heavily
researched stuff. Yeah. Like I'm talking like the early episodes.
Our first episode had we probably each spent a full week on that. And it had like a full slide deck.
Oh yeah. It was like 40 plus hours. Like it was like 80 hours of work to put together the first episode. Then maybe 60 hours for the next two episodes. And we've gotten it down to a couple hours an episode. But so let's call it almost 24 months. But we launched 18 months ago. Probably get the date wrong depending when you're listening to this. But 18 months in, we had no idea what was going to happen. We were super excited and shocked when we did launch. We launched at number one in the business category. We stayed there for weeks, which was awesome.
Yeah. Help us get back there, by the way, folks.
Yeah, I think we're now at like five now.
Yeah.
And then we started to grow from, you know, 1,000, a couple thousand. And then, you know, we started to look at the monthlies and we were hitting 20K a month. And, you know, now we're up between 65 to 75,000 listens a month.
Yeah. Yeah. And so from there, I mean, I think we learned what worked and we kept on researching and writing the best episodes with the goal of delivering as much value as we possibly could. I mean, our goal was to take a different approach, the same way that the Canadian Investor Podcast does it, the two-host show. And it's almost like really exploring topics, news, and creating almost like a school, right?
Yeah. Literally, exactly, like real estate school. You listen to us, you don't need to go anywhere else. We're going to keep you updated and informed on the latest and greatest, but we also are going to go over the fundamentals and the foundational stuff that you need to know. So after two episodes a week, I was about 16 months in, we hit 1 million downloads, which is crazy to think about it because my ego forced me to run some math here. Million downloads times 45 minutes, which is the average episode length. That's 45 million minutes or 750,000 hours of people listening to us talk about real estate. So if you were one of those people, which you likely are because you're listening to this episode, Thank you so much. That's 31,000 days, 4,400 weeks, and 86 days straight of us talking about real estate, Dan. Kind of messed up, but beautiful when you put it like that.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I think people say this a lot. Like, they talk about gratitude and, like, being grateful as, you know, like, thank you. But it is, like, when you think about it, it's really profound to have had all of these people, all of you listening to us right now, like, actually paying attention to what we have to say, but also supporting us, you know, joining the course,
attending,
communicating with us, following us on Instagram, coming to the meetups, starting the meetups, hosting the meetups, like, believing in what we have to do, or what we've been doing. It I can't discount how grateful I am for our audience. It's like, it's huge. And so thank you for all the reviews, over 500 five-star reviews on Spotify and over 350 on Apple, the thousands of messages, emails, DMs, and written reviews for the show we've gotten. You know, the world that this has opened up to us, having conversations with some of the most amazing people, you know, people like Chip Wilson, working with partners and advertisers like Airbnb, Canva, Sherwin-Williams, which we should be announcing right now as well. Who Sherwin-Williams, we know that landlords love painting over everything. It's a meme at this point, you know, paint over a light switch, paint over a power outlet, whatever. So we thought it would be an amazing fit to have Sherwin-Williams. I'm sure you're hearing their ads on the show right now, but they've also come on to sponsor our meetups coast to coast, and they're going to be giving away swag, cool t-shirts. They have like some sick vintage t-shirts and stuff like that. So we wouldn't have opportunities like that if it wasn't for our audience.
Yeah. And so again, extraordinarily grateful. You know, we've got so many funny stories and amazing memories from the last 2 years doing this podcast, literally constant technical difficulties from the power going out to, you know, an episode getting randomly deleted. And Dan, like, the amount of episodes, and doesn't happen too often, but Dan, you and I have done episodes at 4 and 5 a.m. to get them out on time. We've done episodes at 11 and 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, nights, weekends. We have rain, shine. We have not missed an episode. I remember the one fateful time I had to literally go and rent a hotel room for 2 hours to get an episode done. We've done episodes across the country, and I'm going to be heading to Italy in a few weeks, and I'll do episodes there. So the podcast has truly changed our lives. We are now doing deals across the country, literally from coast to coast to coast. And I mean coast because we're doing deals in the territories. Truly changed our lives. And, you know, we want the, you know, again, when we started doing this, Dan, we were doing it, you know, at our desks separately. Now we, you know, then we did it in a garage, and now we've got a full studio built around us. So,
yeah,
you know, my major takeaways from the podcast are, you know, the grit to keep on going has been unmatched in any other business I've done, right? I mean, this has been an absolute grind at some points.
A lot of ups and downs. Like, if you look at the chart, if you looked at the back end chart of like podcast listens, it's like literally a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's like, oh wow, we just had our best week ever, and then like 2 weeks later, it's like no one likes us anymore. Yeah, it's crazy. But you know, what's next for us is special, right? I mean, this has allowed us to bring in equity partners and scale our, you know, a portfolio that we're a part of to well over 50 units. We're negotiating another 26 unit portfolio right now. Dan and I are now likely going to be GP or LPs in many different deals across the country. We're opening up new markets for ourselves and our investor partners and our students and people in our community to get involved in. We've built out an incredible amount of content between the two of us and the experts for the people in the realist community. We're building out an event series across the country, which has over 2,000 people attending monthly events. And our goal is just to keep on growing and providing as much value as we possibly can so that we can help have a meaningful impact and a meaningful change on the Canadian real estate environment as a whole. So a sincere thank you for the growth with the podcast. If you liked this episode and you maybe want a few more of these where Dan and I tell you a bit about more about us, where we came from, what we plan on doing next, all of those good things, let us know what you think of this one, and we'll start to mix these in every once in a while. And hey, if you didn't like it, too bad, it's our show. You only have to listen to one of them and we won't do it again. Any closing remarks, Dan?
No, I think that's everything. I would just say, like, I think that when you talk about sort of like the next phase for us, it's like, we're building a community here, and that means, you know, these events, the Realist course, you know, hopefully, and on social media as well. So I mentioned earlier, like share a photo of you listening to this and tag us, because we want to connect listeners. One of the things that we see, or that makes us the most happy, is seeing listeners connect with one another organically, right? Yeah. Like we don't need to sit there and be like the conduit for that to take place. Seeing people just meet one another and do deals together and, you know, get to know everyone through this community that we built, that's why the platform exists.
Yeah.
It's not, we don't want to be involved in everything. We don't want to take an equity stake or brokerage fee or whatever and making, we want people to have meaningful connections around real estate, and we're the around real estate part, right?
Yeah. No, well said. So we'll leave it there for now. A sincere thank you. You have changed our lives. And in return, we want to continue to do what we have been doing to hopefully change your lives as well. So thank you so much for 1 million downloads. And here's to the next 1 million. The Canadian Real Estate Investor Podcast is for entertainment purposes only, and it is not financial advice. Nick Hill is a mortgage agent with Premier Mortgage Center and a partner in the G&H Mortgage Group. License number 10317, agent license M210004037.
Daniel Foch is a real estate broker licensed with Rare Real Estate, a member of the Canadian Real Estate Association, the Toronto Real Estate Board, and the Ontario Real Estate Association.